Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 97 of Unformidable. We take a look at the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, everyone who dons the orange and blue is in some way unformidable. In our last podcast, we took a look at Pete Harnisch, who was a graduate of local university and my alma mater, Fordham U. You know, I fancy I know a lot about Mets history, not faith and fear at Flushing level knowledge, but I've been watching closely for a pretty long time, and I had no idea until I began preparing the Harnisch podcast that Harnisch had a connection with another former Met who is there but very fuzzy in my memory. I basically remember him as a baseball card because he had one full Major League Baseball season and that was it. But in preparing and researching Pete Harnisch, I learned that Mike Burt's impact on the Mets didn't end after that one MLB season in 1978. He went on to positively impact future Met Harnisch as his pitching coach at Fordham. And before, when he came to the Mets, Brewert, of course, had another notable tie with a much more notable Met figure than Pete Harnisch. Here we go into the unformidable story of Mike Brewert. Michael Edwin Brewert was born on June 21st, 1951, in Jamaica, New York, in the borough where one can find a partner fit for a king in beautiful Queens, New York. According to Google Maps, this means that Mike Brewert was born approximately 6.2 miles from Seaver Way, City Field, Flushing, New York. He would grow up in Queens and attend nearby Christ the King High School, where he was not what you would consider a major league prospect. It's hard to be considered a hot prospect when your high school record is 1 win and 16 losses. However, Brewert did have two things going for him: a lively fastball that could move too much, as he was incredibly wild. In fact, in his early high school days, he reportedly threw his fastball with one finger on the top of the ball, which I absolutely can't imagine that he had a lively fastball with a one-fingered grip. But he had little coaching and admitted in interviews when he was in the majors that he had no idea where it was going. Speaking of his high school days, he said, "No one ever taught me the proper way to throw. The ball would go left, it would go right. Batters would scream at the coaches to take me out." But in addition to a lively fastball, the other thing Brewert had going for him is he, looked the part. What I believe, if it's been a while since I read it, but I think what Malcolm Gladwell called the Warren Harding error. It's been a while since I've read the Gladwell books, but at any rate, at a strapping, handsome 6'6", 220-pound frame, with a 6'6", 220-pound frame, Brewert could throw fast and looked like a pitcher, potentially imposing one at that. Brewert himself had little hope of a professional career. After high school, he was scooping ice cream at a local Carvel and playing for a local Sandlot team. But from there, from that Sandlot team in Queens, he was picked to appear in a Sandlot All-Star game at Yankee Stadium, where he was at his best, striking out 6 batters in 3 innings. And in attendance that day was Met scout Hank Kelly, who, quote, "fell in love with his size and his fastball." I'm sure the local ties didn't hurt, but the Mets signed Brewert in the auspicious Mets year of 1969. It would be a long, hard road for Brewert to try to learn how to pitch and harness his control. In his first full season, after a couple of years in rookie ball, in 1972, he walked 99 while striking out only 72 in 105 minor league innings. However, while he was struggling in his professional life in this new, exciting baseball career, he wasn't struggling in his personal life, as in 1971, in his first spring training with the Mets, Mike Brewert met and hit it off with Gil Hodges' daughter, Irene. Two local kids who grew up in New York, Queens and Brooklyn, I guess they must have had a lot in common. It's perhaps potentially dangerous to date the boss's daughter, at least apocryphally, but things would go well, and the two would marry, making Brewert Gil Hodges' son-in-law, which, as I mentioned in the top, is kind of personally all I really remembered of Brewert. 78, 79 was when I really first started watching baseball, but I was very young in 78. So 1979 feels like the first baseball season I have memories of, however vague they might be. But I know it was the first year I collected baseball cards, so while I don't personally remember watching Brewert pitch, I do remember the Mike Brewert card, that classic Topps late 70s style team banner. I think Mets was in brown, yellow, might be remembering it wrong, I hope not. Brown banner, team name in yellow, Brewert with his cool 70s hair. But, you know, those cards had little tags on the back, and according to Topps baseball card number 172 that year, Mike Brewert, rather than a stat or a different fun fact, was noted as the son-in-law of Gil Hodges, former first baseman of Dodgers, manager of Mets. And I was young, so I might not have known who Mike Brewert was, but as a Met fan, I sure knew who Gil Hodges was. Father-in-law managing the team or not, Brewert continued to struggle through the minors, though, both with Hodges in the org and after his untimely death early in the 1972 season. And if you think minor leaguers are currently underpaid, which of course they are, well, back then, Brewert made, according to an interview I read, approximately $500 per month, which of course meant he had to take numerous off-season jobs, which included being a grave digger at Calvary Cemetery in Queens, stomping cans, which I guess pre-recycling machines, at a Pathmark in Brooklyn, and he worked as a fitness instructor at a Jack LaLanne spa in Bensonhurst. This is all courtesy of a Mike Lupica profile I dug up from 1978, which was worth it both for the quality, but also for the 1970s hipster Mike Lupica headshot in the article byline. That is not a Mike Lupica that I've ever seen before or remember. But I digress. In the 1972 offseason, again after Hodges' untimely death, the Mets lost Brewert to the Phillies in the Rule 5 draft briefly in the winter of 72, but he was returned back to the Mets in April of 73. He would continue to toil in the minors, getting up to AA and AAA, but never getting a whiff of the majors. Couldn't have blamed him if he gave up the ghost before 1978, but he did not. And a couple of perhaps fateful things involving bigger name Mets players, indirectly, I would guess, led to Brewer getting his shot, because 1977 was, of course, the year of the Midnight Massacre and the departure of Mets legend Tom Seaver. The 77 team, of course, bottomed out without the franchise, and the team continued dismantling what was left of its established, or shall we say, reasonably paid talent that offseason, trading off all-star hurler John Matlack to the Texas Rangers. All these departures would lead to vacancies and gaping holes in the Mets rotation, and the career minor leaguer would finally capitalize after 7 long full seasons in the minor leagues. At the age of 26, 2 months prior to his 27th birthday, after an excellent spring training in 1978, Brewert got the call into Joe Torre's office to find out, after the 7 long years, at 38-51 record in the minor leagues, he had made it to the show. Again, according to Lupica's article, Brewert bought himself a what I would imagine was a well-deserved $5 bottle of champagne to celebrate.
Kara Swisher here. You may know me as the person who made Mark Zuckerberg sweat, pushed Kim Kardashian to talk dollars, or got Secretary Mayor Pete Buttigieg to eat a juicy strawberry live on stage. Okay, that one was awkward. But that's what I like to do, make powerful people comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now I'll be doing that on my new show from New York Magazine, On with Kara Swisher. We'll bring you news and the newsmakers I'm paying attention to, and we'll do it twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. Go check it out, On with Kara Swisher, wherever you get your podcasts.
Brewert made his major league debut in Game 4 of the 1978 season, and perhaps the most surprising thing to me in preparing this podcast is that the Mets started out 1978 3-0. Game 4 was actually game 2 of a doubleheader at Shea Stadium against the Expos. The Mets had won the first three games of the series opening the season. But the fans, well, at least there wasn't much excitement the first couple of games of the year at Shea without Seaver. There are only 11,000 fans there on opening day, under 10,000 the second game of the season on a Saturday in April. But 30,000 did show up for the Sunday, April 9, 1978 doubleheader. Perhaps most of Jamaica Queens was in attendance to cheer on their local boy. I don't know, but I would like to think so. In his major league debut, Brewer took a 5-0 loss, but he pitched pretty well, going 6 innings, surrendering 8 hits and 3 runs. Only one of those runs was earned, however. The first batter he faced, Ellis Valentine, singled, but was gunned down trying to steal second by the late, great, lamented, and always unformidable John Stearns. We're happy to have featured him in a recent podcast and really saddened by his recent passing. And even just as a line in a box score, it was nice to see his name and just think about who he was, and it seemed fitting, you know, helping settle down his young, well, not that young, but a rookie pitcher in his debut with a nice clutch play. And settle down Brewer would, retiring the next two batters, including striking out Andre Dawson to end the frame for his first career Major League strikeout. His second career start would come on April 18, 1978 in St. Louis, and there Brewer would earn his first career win. He would hurl 6 more innings, allowing 1 earned run, a walk, and 3 strikeouts. It was a 1-1 game going into the 7th. The Mets had quite the anemic offense in 1978. I mean, they pretty much just had a bad all-around team, but the offense in particular, I mean, Craig Swan led the league in ERA that year. Pat Zachary had a pretty good year. Jerry Guzman went 3-15 with a 3.75 ERA in what would be his last year as a Met. But at any rate, it was a 1-1 game going into the 7th. The Mets loaded the bases with 2 outs. Torrey took the opportunity to pinch hit for Brewert with young Bobby Valentine, who doubled down the left field line, scoring 2 and giving Brewert his first career Major League victory. Through 5 starts, Brewert was 1-2 with 2 no decisions, but a sparkling 1.82 ERA, which prompted the Lupica article in the New York Times. I mean, probably would have happened anyway. You got the local kid makes good angle is hard to beat. But whether it was the Mets or just, you know, small sample size, returning to the reality of why he took him 7 years to get to the majors, or whether it was a Lupica curse, Brewer began to struggle shortly thereafter. His ERA rose to 5 by late June. He got sent back down to Tidewater for about a month to kind of straighten himself up, but came back up in July and finished the year largely in the Mets rotation. After a win over the Padres on August 24th to jump his record to 3-6, Brewer alternated good and bad starts down the stretch, but ended up losing 5 of his last decisions over the month of September. The bad starts were rough, as he allowed 19 runs over 35 innings in the month. However, in the middle of that, he'd have his best major league moment on September 17th of 1978. Brewer took the hill for the 61-88 Mets against the 82-66 Philadelphia Phillies in front of 35,000 plus at Veterans Stadium on a Sunday afternoon. He was facing up against Larry Christensen and taking on a lineup with some impressive hitters, including Greg Luzinski, the Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt, Richie Hebner, Bake McBride. The Mets would stake him to a 2-0 lead just out of the box in the top of the first. Mazzilli would lead off with a double. Elliot Maddox would single him home and was 2 outs. And Maddox on second. John Stearns would single Maddox home. There's Stearns again to give his pitcher a 2-0 lead. And Brewert would do the rest, throwing the first and only complete game of his major league career, a 4-hit shutout against the Phillies, walking 2 batters, striking out 5, in a tidy game duration of 1 hour and 59 minutes. Brewer would go on to lose his last two starts. The following start would be against the Phillies at Shea, the last time he would take the mound at Shea as a Met. He would, in this tribute to the 78 Mets, he would go seven innings, allowing only one run, but would take the loss, 1-0. This time, Christensen getting the best of Brewert. Kuzman would actually come on in relief of Brewert in that game to pitch the last two innings, which is just bizarre to me. His final major league start would be in game 160 of that year on September 29th against the Cubs. And couldn't blame the offense in this one, as in his final start of his career, Brewert would go four innings, surrendering five runs on eight hits, walking two, and striking out one. After the 78 season, Brewert was traded by the Mets to the Texas Rangers, along with Bob Myrick, to bring on a veteran pitcher for the Mets pitching staff by the name of Doc Ellis. And if you don't think we're going to go from Harnish to Brewert, and now Brewert to Doc Ellis, largely as an excuse to talk about Doc Ellis's acid-drenched no-hitter, and also look at his time with the Mets, you're crazy. Of course we're going to do that soon. I've been biding my time waiting for a Doc Ellis podcast. Brewert would never make it to the majors again. He would toil in the minors for several more years, pitching in the Rangers and the Yankees organizations for several more minor league seasons, before finally retiring after the 1982 season, which he spent in Columbus, the Yankees AAA affiliate. All in all, Brewert pitched parts of 12 different seasons in the minor leagues, going 62-73 with an ERA of an even 4. He threw 1,163 career minor league innings, walking 577, striking out 552. The most interesting statistical quirk to me of Brewert's major league pitching career is the fact that he actually flashed pretty good control in the majors. In his one 1978 season, he went 4-11 with a 4.78 ERA, appearing in 27 games, 22 of them starts, 133 2/3 innings pitched, surrendered 171 hits, but only 34 walks in 133 2/3 innings, 2.3 walks per 9 innings, which is pretty impressive. Only 56 strikeouts in those 133 2/3 innings. The other interesting thing is that he only surrendered 6 home runs, 0.4 home runs per 9 innings. In fact, Brewert had a 4.78 ERA, but he actually had a 3.12 FIP that year. And the walk rate was totally anomalous from his minor league career, and you know, not just the early years, you know, even in the 70s, even later in the late 70s and 80s after his major league stint, he'd have a lot of seasons where he'd walk more batters than he struck out. His minor league career, he walked 4.5 batters per 9 innings. The home run rate thing was actually pretty consistent. He only surrendered 56 homers over 1,163 innings, that same 0.4 homers per 9 innings rate. They said he threw hard, so maybe it was a heavy fastball, but even in an era with a lot less power, Mike Brewert did not surrender many long balls. That did not help him get to the majors, other than that one exciting, for him, probably not very exciting for Met fans to watch that team in 78 that I have vague memories of, but again, 4-11, 4.78 ERA, he has a negative 1.4 WAR, according to Baseball Reference. But why be salty or negative about someone who worked so hard to get one season in the MLB sun in the orange and blue? As noted, after his playing days, Brewert became pitching coach at Fordham University, spent a long time there as pitching coach in the 80s and 90s. In addition to Harnish, he also tutored one other future major leaguer, Miguel Jimenez, pitched for a couple of years in the A's organization. And while he was Gil Hodges' son-in-law, sadly, Mike and Irene Brewert eventually divorced. Mike remarried to a Rosemary Petrillo, has two children, and at last report that I could find, lives out on Long Island. I wish he was still in Queens or in one of the boroughs, but I guess I can I guess I can consider someone living on Long Island a New Yorker, or, you know, New York adjacent. His perseverance gave him a glorious year in the majors, a glorious 1979 Topps baseball card, and a block in our franchise's quirky history, the unformidable Mike Brewert. Thank you for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on all your socials. And look for this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR. The show is at Unformidable. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets.